Though I do love my makeup routine, I feel like I want to spice it up a little bit. I could use a bit of a refresher because I've been doing the same thing for a while. However, I will definitely still use the same makeup line I've been using for 4 years now. And so whether I'm just simply adding my Liquid Lash Extensions mascara by Thrive Cosmetics for an everyday touch of mascara look, or going all out with their highlighter, eyeliner, and eyeshadow for some full glam, I simply love applying Thrive Cosmetics to my face. And why? Well, the quality is honestly impeccable, and they support a great cause. It's even in the name, Thrive Cosmetics, Cause. So Thrive Cosmetics and Bigger Than Beauty Skincare aim to empower customers, employees, and giving partners to live confidently. And they practice responsive giving, donating high-performance products or much-needed funds to help communities thrive. I can't emphasize enough how great their mascara is. I'll never give that up. Even if as I refresh and redo my makeup routine, I'll always be using their Liquid Lash Extensions, because their unique formula creates tubes around each lash, lengthening them. And it's super easy to remove. It just slides right off with some warm water and there's no smudging. Plus, it has some nourishing ingredients which help support longer, stronger, and healthier looking lashes over time. And as someone with blonde eyebrows, I also appreciate their Infinity Waterproof Eyebrow Liner. This easy-to-use waterproof pencil holds like a wax and blends like a powder. I love it. You can't beat it. And so you can line your brows to give them structure and create natural-looking strokes. I love the natural look to fill in sparse areas. It even comes with a spoolie brush to lift and tame your brows after application, and they have 8 shades to choose from, and it adjusts to your natural brow color for a perfect match every time. Pretty awesome. So refresh your everyday look with Thrive Cosmetics, luxury beauty that gives back. Right now, you can get an exclusive 10% off your first order at thrivecosmetics.com/magic. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CauseMetics.com/magic for 10% off your first order.
The image of the 1,000 Buddhas to me was, oh, we're all destined for this awakening. And by practicing, we're going to lift each other up and we're all going to get there together. And that still resonates with me a lot, that this is a group effort.
I am so amazed by the work that you do and so honored to be chatting with you.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm always honored to chat with someone who is a very powerful and empowered woman like yourself. You are a multi-talented woman who I really look up to creatively and also on a very soulful level, as well as there's a lot of depth and wisdom that you carry from what I've read and heard from you and also seen in your art. So yeah, before we get into your story of your very famous 10,000 Buddhas, I want to hear from your voice the story of you and the many twists and turns and trials and errors that you've had to endure as you've taken on your soul's journey to become the artist and the person that you are today.
Let's see. Well, I would say I always knew in my heart that I would be an artist. Even as a little girl, I would always painting and drawing, and always had that inclination to want to make things, and found a lot of joy in making things, and was encouraged. I'm really grateful to my parents for encouraging me, and you know, buying me art supplies and framing my little goofy drawings, all of that. And when I went to college, I didn't go to an art school. I considered it, but in my mind, I wanted to go to a more just well-rounded liberal arts school, because I always felt like the best art was art that was informed by a lot of interesting things, you know, whether it's history or physics or travel or philosophy. So I didn't want to just go to a craft making school. I really wanted to go to a school where I could feed myself and nourish myself with a lot of wisdom and inspiration because I felt like that would give me the best opportunity to make the best art. I was an art major in school and did a lot of painting and sculpting. And I even interned for a while at some art galleries in San Francisco. And then during my sophomore year in college, I was kind of like going along. I was enthusiastic. I was loving school. And then all of a sudden, it was like running into a wall. Just all of a sudden, I just couldn't do it anymore. It was like I can't explain it. It was like all of a sudden, I had no interest in what I was doing. Like my enthusiasm just was gone. And I felt so fatigued and burdened by being in school and having to go to classes. And I knew that something was deeply off. I decided to take a semester off of school. So I left school to see if I could find my mojo again. And so I was 19 and I took a leave of absence and I set off on a really big adventure. And I traveled to India for the first time when I was 19. And I traveled to Nepal and I traveled to Indonesia and Thailand, and like just a big trip to open my eyes and see what the world was about. And it was very deeply impactful. And I believe, like, I remember on that trip really just having a prayer in my heart, like, please help me find my way. Like, I don't know what's wrong. I've been doing everything what I was supposed to do. You know, I got good grades and I worked hard and I like checked all the boxes and took all the tests, and I didn't know why I was having this. I just felt frozen in my life. And so as I traveled, I definitely had this prayer of like, help me find my way. Like, help me find what I'm supposed to do. The universe has a funny way of answering those calls, not often the way we would expect or maybe even prefer how those calls get answered. And so I came home and I came down with I started having a lot of health issues and very strange symptoms. One day I came home, my feet were so sore and my feet had blistered, like the entire sole of my feet blistered and fell off. Like it was just really weird. And rashes and canker sores. And basically what happened is I was having a huge autoimmune crash, just a total health crisis. And so, and during that time, I was living with my sister in San Francisco and she took me to my first yoga class. So this is what got me on my path with yoga, you know, through a spiritual crisis, through a health crisis. You know, I'd asked, help me find my way. And it pointed me in the right direction, but, you know, not in the way I'd hoped, I suppose. I started practicing yoga and really it was a life raft to me at the time. At 19, going through all this confusion and life confusion and health confusion. And it really gave me this inner stability. When I fell in love with yoga, I really started to reconsider my pathway as an artist because here I was finding like this deep resource and wisdom and like life-changing support through yoga and the yoga community and what I was learning. And suddenly I looked at what I was doing, making art, and it seemed really superficial. Like, how was this going to help anyone? This is just narcissistic. And I really kind of took a big pivot at that point. And I did kind of put all my desires of being an artist way on the back burner. I'm not even sure I thought I wanted to do it anymore. And I turned all my love and attention toward yoga, toward studying it, toward eventually teaching it. I would say years into my practice, I was about 6 years into my practice of yoga. At this point, graduated from school, working at a book publisher, still not totally sure what I was going to do with my life. My teacher, Larry Schultz, told me I should take the teacher training. And he said, you should really take the teacher training, Amanda. It'll change your life. I'm like, how is this going to change my life? Like, it's just a training. At this point, I've done so much school, so much education, so much yoga. I was like, how is like a 28-day yoga workshop, basically, that's how I was thinking it going to change my life. And I signed up. It was a training started on January 2nd, 2000. So it was the first or the second day of the new millennium. And we all lived through the new millennium. Of course, everyone was like, what's going to happen? Is Y2K, is the world going to crash and the computer's going to forget everything?
Of course.
It's hard to, you know, it seems so funny to remember that time. But yeah, we weren't sure what was going to happen, and pretty much nothing happened. And except for I started doing my teacher training, and it did totally change my life. I mean, I ended up leaving the partner that I was with. I moved. I met my husband, my future husband. I went off to India again, and I started teaching yoga. And then I opened a yoga studio all within a year of taking my training. So yoga did really super change my life. And
your entire life.
Yeah. Like when I met my husband and we were in our teacher training together, that's how we met. We met on that first day of teacher training. When we were done with the training and we were falling in love, we decided to go to India together. He had never been. I had been that one time before when I was 19. And when we went this time, we went to study yoga down in Mysore with Patabi Joyce, and who's the Ashtanga yoga lineage holder. I think just being together, being with him, he's such a hyper creative person. I think that second trip to India really shifted something, and I started to see all this beautiful divine artwork and that calling of inside me to make things and to be an artist slowly started to creep back in after many years of just totally thinking it wasn't the right path for me. And I think what happened was I was able to see in India how art was used as a way to inspire and uplift people. It was devotional painting, you know, it was made by people who were in love with the divine and wanted to express that and wanted to use their art as reminders for other people to see the divine in everyone and everything. And everywhere you went in India, you know, in the rickshaws, there would be Ganeshas and Lakshmis, and in the shops, like it wasn't, art wasn't like this elite in the gallery kind of obtuse, hard to understand, you're not sure if you're interpreting it right. It was like for everybody, and it was everywhere. So it really, really shifted my relationship with being like wanting to make art again, and helped call me back home to that desire that I'd always had. And I started to paint again. First, it was really just little devotional paintings. I painted a lot of the gods and goddesses that I was studying through my yoga training, through being in India. I started to paint landscapes, you know, where I lived. We moved after we took that trip to India. I moved up to Point Reyes, where we live now, and we opened our yoga studio in 2001. So we've been at our studio now for 17 years. And it's beautiful here. And I started to paint the landscapes and the little cows. And I started to paint, you know, the things that I was in love with. And I just kind of did it for my own pleasure. And then several years later, we made another trip back to India. And on this trip, I had been looking at some images of paintings in these caves called the Ajanta Caves, which are in central India. I convinced Nicholas that after we went and studied yoga in Mysore again, that we should go and see these magical caves filled with incredible art. And he agreed, and we made a pilgrimage there. And that's where I saw the Buddhas for the first time. Inside the caves, one of the murals was 1,000 little Buddhas sitting together meditating. And so that's where the spark for that journey began. That was a long answer.
In that answer, I seriously thought of so many pockets of questions just from the story itself. And 10,000 Buddhas, dear listeners, if you're not familiar with this very famous worldwide art piece, Please Google it right now. It's fascinating. I absolutely love it. And I love the story behind it. And now we get to learn the inspiration for it, which is beautiful. And I'm curious, what does the image of Buddha represent to you, as well as the grand image of 10,000 Buddhas?
I think what happened when I saw that painting in the caves is, at first I didn't, you know, there was so much beautiful art on that trip. I was just taking it all in. When I got home, that image just kept coming up and resurfacing in my mind until I just was like, it was like compelled me. It like forced me to paint it. It was like, you just got to get this out. You're just obsessed with this image. And I got a biggest piece of plywood I could find, which was like a 4 by 8 foot piece. And I started to paint what I remembered seeing, which was all these little Buddhas sitting together and their different mudras and their different little facial expressions. And there was some beauty to me and in the symmetry that they were all sitting together and doing their own practice. They were all slightly different, but they were all in it together. And I think when I've reflected back why I think this image was so powerful to me, what it meant to me was it was reflecting the experience that I was having practicing yoga in community and meditating with my fellow yogis, going to group classes, studying with Patavi Joyce. You know, he would come to America back then and you would be in a room with 500 or 600 yogis and breathing and moving together. So that feeling of practicing together in a large en masse was very real to me. So I think part of the image of all the Buddhists sitting together really spoke to me about the power of community. I know for a fact that I would have not have continued to practice so consistently for 25 years if it weren't for all the people that I practice with, if it weren't for the Sangha, if it weren't for the studios and the teachers and the other fellow yogis who show up. I know that gave me so much support all those years. So I think that was part of it. I think I also really resonated with this idea that it's not just this one person who gets to be enlightened. It was the image of the 1,000 Buddhas to me was, oh, we're all destined for this awakening. And by practicing, we're going to lift each other up and we're all going to get there together. And that still resonates with me a lot, that this is a group effort and a responsibility, of myself to the collective. You know, what I think about, what I say, how I act, it affects the people around me and it affects the whole. And I think that interconnectedness is a very powerful, and art has a funny way of touching that part of our minds that's beyond logic. And it's just very visceral. And I think that's what I have been getting all these years from painting all these Buddhas together.
What do you experience that time of the month? For myself, it varies month to month. Some months I honestly feel fine. Other months though, I'll feel very sluggish, a bit down, or I'll get these intense cravings, like give me something deep fried right now. Then I know it's that time of the month. And managing PMS is easier with estro control. Also, Happy Mammoth, the creators of Hormone Harmony, are dedicated to making women's lives easier by using only science-backed ingredients proven to work, and they never compromise on quality, and it shows. Hormone Harmony contains herbal extracts known as adaptogens, and these amazing ingredients help the body adapt to stressors, including the chaotic hormonal changes women naturally experience. And Hormone Harmony isn't just for menopause or perimenopause. Any woman with symptoms can benefit from it. Symptoms like racing thoughts and low moods, or poor sleep and constant fatigue, or occasional bloating and gas, low libido, feeling sluggish, hot flashes, and night sweats. Hormone Harmony has got you covered. It can help with all of these issues. So for a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code MAGIC at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code MAGIC for 15% off today, and your hormones will thank you.
I'm so curious, where was your favorite place to paint, if there was any?
Oh my gosh.
I know.
I really don't have a favorite, but I just recently posted about the first big mural that I did, which was in Miami. And that was a big landmark wall for me because it was my first big public art piece. And I'd been to Miami during Art Basel, and I had seen this arts district filled with people just painting in the streets, and I had never seen anything like that before. just crews of people taking over the town and making art, you know, out in the street. And I remember seeing that one year and thinking, oh my God, this would be the coolest thing to be part of. And I'm a bit shy, and I won't really ask for things, but right. my husband is such a great advocate. He called our friend in Miami and said, hey, do you think you can get Amanda a wall? And within 20 minutes, she had two amazing walls for me. And so I had this huge opportunity. The wall was such a high profile place right across the street from, it's called the Wynwood Walls, which is the largest outdoor museum of street art in the world. And the wall that she secured for me was a 100-foot long wall across the street. So it was just like, I don't know. It was wild. And I'd never painted a mural before that size. So I was so nervous. For months before I was scheduled to go paint it, I was just like every night before bed, I was working it out in my mind how I was going to tackle it. What kind of equipment would I need? How would I prepare, you know, the sequence? And do I do the background or then the line? You know, it's just working it out in my head. And when the time came, it definitely was a huge challenge. There was just so much that was new to me. I didn't, for example, know what the machines are called that painters go up and down on to paint an outdoor large-scale mural. I really just like took a picture. I took a screenshot and I sent it to an equipment company. I said, I need one of these. And I didn't know even what it was called.
Whatever this is.
Yeah, whatever this is, it goes up and down. That's what I need. They're like scissor lifts or they're boom lifts. Now I know all the details. Like, I feel like
you're a pro.
Yeah, now I'm a pro, but I was really so green that I didn't even know what they were called. And because during that weekend, there's so many people painting and art installations, I think I got the last scissor lift in all of Miami. And it was kind of a not the best. It had like some weird quirks and it wouldn't drive straight. So if I wanted to go straight, I had to go left, right, left, right, left, right.
It would be so challenging. I would have the hardest time.
So I thought it, you know, I now know that it was probably like a problem with the machine. But of course, I just thought I was incompetent and couldn't drive this thing. I kept crashing it into the wall. Luckily, it was like a really solid cement wall because I crashed into it so many times. That first wall, it was just so, you know, it was hot. It was Miami, and then it would rain, and then it would thunder, and then the wind would pick up and might blow my stencils down the alley. And I think the most challenging part was it was my third day of painting, and there was a man who had his office in the parking lot down at the other side of the alley where I was painting. And he was really irritated that I was delaying him getting into his office because I had to drive this rogue scissor lift, left, right to get out of his way. And, you know, it wasn't the most smooth thing. And so he was screaming at me and he's like, I'm coming out in 10 minutes. I don't want you to be on this thing and have to wait for you again. Or I'm, you know, and I was like, okay. So nervous. And so I'm waiting and the time is like 10 minutes. Oh, okay. So 10 minutes go by, 20 minutes go by, 30 minutes. And I'm thinking, oh my God, I don't know if he's going to come out again, but he's going to yell at me if he comes out right now. I have to finish this wall. Like I have one more day to finish. So I get back on the scissor lift and get back to work. And sure enough, he comes out and his face is just red. And he is like, smoke coming out of his ears. And I'm like, oh my God, quickly try to drive this thing out of the way. He gets in his car and he guns it and he like drives right for me. At that point, I'm off the lift and I had to throw myself against the wall. I swear to God, he just tried to take me out. And I was just shaking. And I really, it was like a raw introduction to being a street artist. Like, this was outside the safety of my little cozy art studio where I normally worked. And it was super intense. And I almost quit. I was almost like, this is too much for me, you know? And my husband was there and he was like, you can do it. You know, you're okay. Let's get back there and finish what you started. And so that wall, I don't know if it was my favorite wall, but it was one of the biggest accomplishments to get over that first initial fear and all the things that came with it. And so I'm very proud of myself for getting through that first one.
Wow. Amanda, one, I'm happy that you're alive and safe and that your painting is there and it still exists and that you didn't allow these fears and these judgments from others or these outside distractions or your own judgment, your own fears, your own mental distractions or physical distractions get in the way. I am so happy that you created it.
Thank you. Yeah. And to anybody out there listening who has a project they've been wanting to start, I was talking to somebody recently. If you're afraid or you're nervous, that's a good thing. You know, that means you're onto something. And you can only be courageous if first there's fear. If it's too easy, there's no victory in that. So carry on. Just put one foot in step of the other. You'll figure it out. Go for it.
So true. But fear is one thing. And then another thing is, well, writers call it writer's block. But do you ever run into artist block or ever lose motivation or inspiration to create?
You know, I haven't in the last 6 or 7 years of this project. I think having this goal of painting 10,000 Buddhas really anchored me. I wasn't having to come up with a new thing every time I set out to work. And what was fun for me was the challenge of how do I keep it fresh? And it just seemed to be really easy. Even, you know, I was painting today in the studio and just really excited because there seems like an infinite amount of ways that I can stretch into this one theme and, you know, scale and color and different mediums and, you know, spray paint and gold and letterpress. And there's just so many different ways to make them.
I love that. So you get creative with how you create the Buddha.
Yeah. So it gave me sort of a boundary. And then I feel like it gave me a ton of freedom to really be free.
That is amazing. And that's because a lot of people run into this block where they just feel stuck or they just don't feel motivated or inspired to create anything. And it's hard to get past, but your why was strong enough and your vision was strong enough that you ended up, Bill, 6 years on creating today. That's so beautiful.
Yeah. And I would say that before I landed on this project, or it found me rather, I had many false starts. I had many ideas for things that never fully got off the ground, or I'd get started and then I would peter out with my enthusiasm. So I've had that experience in the past. I can definitely relate to it. And I think it just takes, you just have to keep going till you find the right project, till you find the right muse. So I'm really grateful because I have had those creative miscarriages, as I call them, in the past.
I love that. Creative miscarriages. I love that, but I don't love it at the same time. Yeah. I love the sound.
They're hard.
Yeah. When you said that it came to you, which of course it did, I'm curious about your creative process. Do you just download these images in your mind, then bring it to life? Or do you just begin painting on an empty canvas and see what comes? Or maybe none of the above or both? What is your creative process like?
I would say my process is more like the first thing you said, is I often see it first in my mind's eye. Mm-hmm. I'll have like a vision of what I want to make. And then it's always interesting how having a vision and then trying to manifest it, it changes along the way. Sometimes really trying very hard to match what I'm making to look like what I see in my head. And other times I allow it to kind of change and morph a little bit as it wants to come out. especially like today I was in the print shop and it's really hard to control the ink. Like I have these oils and I mix them and I roll them onto a piece of plexiglass. And the process of mixing the color and then mixing them on the plate and then I run them through the press and press the plate onto a piece of paper, it's just magical what happens. I can't say I'm in total control. A lot of times I'm like, wow, I had no idea what's going to look like that. So there's definitely a lot of room for things to happen that aren't what I'm previously thought was going to happen.
Yeah, well, you yourself are being a vessel and just expressing what's coming through. That is beautiful. It's amazing that your work has been featured. I mean, not only is it all around the world, but also in National Geographic and New York Magazine and Yoga Journal, which I bet many of the listeners, that's just a dream to them. You know, that's something that they want their art to be seen. And do you have any advice for those that might also be introverts like you, but they are shy to get their art out there? Or even if they're not shy, but they just don't know where to start. Do you have any advice for getting your art out there?
That's a great question. First of all, I had no idea that this project would get this big or that it would get the attention that it's had. I didn't set out for that. I really was just trying to make something cool for myself.
Well, and following the call.
Yeah, following the call and trying to keep up with my ultra creative husband.
Right, I'm sure.
Do something. So when I did that first wall in Miami that I told you the story about, I had just made my Instagram handle. I just, you know, decided to call it 10,000 Buddhas. And again, it was Nicholas's idea that I signed I probably would have left Miami and not signed that mural at all because I just wasn't thinking about that stuff. And he's like, no, you should put your handle on there. And I was like, okay, I put it on. At first, I got the wrong number of zeros and I had to wipe it out and do it again.
Oh my gosh, 100,000. Well, I mean, it will be. It is.
Yeah, it probably will be. And so I put that on there. And the beauty of Instagram is that it was a public wall and people made this project happen. You know, people posted, they shared it, they tagged me. They're the ones who spread it and made it, you know, made it a thing. And then because of that, I kept getting invitations to paint other walls, and then more people would take pictures in front of it and share it and tag. So it was a very organic process. I think the only advice is like, do your work and put it out there in some way. Like, have a show, share it with your family, do an open studios, do something, post it on Instagram. Even if you never leave your house, like, you could do a drawing a day or whatever your project is. It was super helpful for me to share with this audience. Before I did public walls and before Instagram, I would paint and maybe have a show once every 2 years, and the show would be up for a month. Maybe a few hundred people would see it. So it really is, it's an amazing new world that we live in, that we can get our art out there. And I think it's much easier than it used to be.
Oh, yeah. Thousands and tens of thousands and hundreds of thousands to see it. Perhaps the new signature is going to be an Instagram handle. or maybe do your signature and then underneath it always add your Instagram handle if you're seeking that. That's actually not a bad idea.
It's not a bad idea. I mean, I don't sign my name on my murals. I only signed the Instagram handle, and that's partly a conscious decision. When I saw the caves, the painting in the caves, those caves weren't signed by anybody. You know, they were probably a collective group of artists who worked on those paintings and over many generations. And having been inspired by that, it wasn't important to me that my name was on it. In fact, I was like kind of cringe the idea of signing it. But I felt okay putting at 10,000 Buddhas because it was almost just informational. Like, it wasn't so much about me, and it helped me.
I really admire that. I really do. And that just makes it more of what you practice with the Buddha philosophy. So I love that. And another art of yours, you've been a yogini for, well, almost 3 decades now, right?
Yeah, 25 years. Yep.
Wow. So when you were introduced to this 25 years ago, I'm sure you didn't know it would be where it is today. And what are your thoughts of how it has evolved from back then to the way it has hit this Western world and become more widely known?
Well, I've noticed, of course, a lot of changes. When I started practicing, there was maybe only 3 or 4 yoga studios in San Francisco. And now there's maybe hundreds. I don't know if you like,
yes, because
they're on every block. And so there's been a huge growth and so many people practicing, which is amazing. I've seen a shift in when I started, there were also just a handful of these master guru teachers. And that there was a lot of wonderful richness in that heritage and those traditions. What I'm seeing now more is it is not so much about the singular master teacher, but more of this collective, which also goes back to this image of all the Buddhas sitting together. I feel like yogis today are much more influenced by each other. They're sharing different methods. It's not like one true path of this, you know, it's all mixed and blended together because there's so much sharing going on and so much pollination of different styles and different information, which is great. It's creative evolution. So I've always had a deep respect for the tradition and the lineage, and I also respect and appreciate the creativity that Western yogis have brought to the practice. So I think there's a balance. I think when you get a little bit too creative and you've lost the roots, then you may have lost some of the power of the practice. And I think being too by the book, you know, dogmatic, that, you know, with the old way or the right way, that you know, that's not so great either. So I think there's a happy middle place that we can find with balancing those two aspects.
That's amazing to hear from you, especially since you studied with someone who basically created the traditional way of Ashtanga yoga. I asked MC Yogi this question too, because it's so amazing to me to know that you studied with Sri K. Patabi Joyce, right?
Mm-hmm. At the time, I don't think we realized how lucky we were. I don't think we were thinking of it. It was just, he was our teacher's teacher, and that's why we went to study with him. And I'm so grateful that we did and had that experience. There's definitely was a transmission with those, that generation of teachers. They just had so much yoga in their bodies and in their bones, and that just being around them was a real learning experience.
Oh, I am sure. What was the greatest message or learning experience or lesson that you received from him?
Steadfastness with the practice. You know, he'd just been practicing for 60 plus years when I met him in his 80s, and his joy of teaching had not diminished at all. He really loved to teach. I think I just remember also he really redefined what it was like to be in your mid 80s. You know, he was, when I met him, he's in his mid 80s and he was like rocking his world tour with like,
oh, yeah,
thousands of people coming to see him. And that's really cool. I feel like, you know, what a great example of not just, you know, getting older and giving up, but he just pressed on as long as his body would carry him. He continued to teach. And that was really powerful to witness.
No kidding. I can definitely see you and your hubby also being 80-year-old teachers or yogis, but I see teachers too. And it's amazing. I think the story of you two, you opened up your yoga studio and you worked every single class. You taught every single class every single day, 364 days a year with only Christmas off.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That's so adorable, first of all, but I just can't even fathom, like, how did you manage to work with your art and also well, with him and his music and you both together in your relationship, how did you balance that all?
I don't know. I honestly don't know. If I think about doing that now, I'd fall over thinking that was like way too much, but somehow we just did it. Somehow we were just young and we didn't know any better. We just did it.
Force, like you were just listening and following it.
Yeah, I think we just did what we felt like we needed to do to keep it going. And not only did we teach all the classes, but we each had 3 other jobs to pay the bills because the first 5 years of having a yoga studio was like running a, you know, zero profit operation. So on top of all that, we had a bunch of other jobs that we.
That's amazing. Yeah. Wow. And I love that you two are still working together and collaborating and creating art and performing and doing yoga retreats. What is that like doing that with your husband?
It's so good. Oh. It's so good. It makes me so happy. Oh. Yeah, it's the best. I'm so grateful and happy that we get to share all of it together. Yeah.
That's so beautiful. Are you ready for a rapid fire round?
Okay, I'll do my best.
Oh, you've got this. Dog or cat person?
Oh, dogs.
Yoga or painting?
Oh, total tie. When I always say, whenever I'm painting, I think about yoga. Whenever I'm doing yoga, I'm thinking about painting. They're like, it's super weird.
Wow. And you kind of are always doing both at the same time.
Yeah. So I can't even separate them anymore. Yeah.
Do you prefer to paint in the morning or at night?
Mm-hmm. Morning.
Do you prefer to flow in the morning or at night?
I would say morning or midday for everything. By the evening, I am like, I want to eat and watch a show and wind down. I'm not a big evening creative person. Get my creativity in the daylight.
Yes, I feel that. Where was, well, I already asked this, your favorite place and you didn't know for the 10,000 Buddhas, huh?
Well, Miami was a big landmark. I would say my favorite, now that I've thought about it, is Washington, D.C., where I did a 3-story mural. And on the last day of painting, these 3 beautiful Tibetan monks showed up and did a whole ceremony and blessed the wall and chanted. Wow. And that was definitely a peak favorite moment of my whole life.
That is amazing. That would be so cool. Wow. What is your favorite MC Yogi song?
That's a really hard one. Oh, you know, I have to say he just wrote a new one called Golden State of Mind, and it'll be coming out in a couple months, and it's my new favorite. It's so good.
I can't wait to hear it.
Yep.
Ashtanga or Vinyasa?
I would have to say Vinyasa because it's adaptability and you can do it slow or you can do it fast. It's just more modified. But I did recently go back and do like a full primary series. I hadn't done it in a while and I felt like I was walking on air after it was, it reminded me what a brilliant and powerful sequence that is. So for life, probably Vinyasa, but definitely go back and get that medicine from Ashtanga every once in a while.
Yeah, it does do that. You're right. Like you're walking on air. Your favorite music artist aside from your hubby?
Oh, I actually grew up listening to a lot of jazz. Both my grandparents played jazz instruments and my dad listened to it and I inherited a lot of their records. So my favorite musicians are like, I love Ella Fitzgerald and Billie Holiday and those old incredible Aretha Franklin, those old soul singers and jazz singers are maybe my favorite.
And painter who inspires you?
It feels kind of cliche to say it, but Georgia O'Keeffe, Frida Kahlo, these incredible women who are pioneers in their time. And when I was painting the deity painting, somebody said it looked like Frida Kahlo went to India. So I thought that was so flattering. I definitely, yeah, they've been huge inspirations to me.
Oh, yeah, they're amazing. I looked at Frida's exhibit in London and it was phenomenal. So, no, that's not cliche. Book you're currently reading, if any.
I read a lot. I just finished two books by the same author, Madeline Miller. One was called Circe and the other was called Song of Achilles. They're both creative interpretations of Greek mythology, and I love mythology. So those were amazing, like historical fiction that I just finished.
I love it. Define love.
Beauty, expansive, radiant, and doesn't want anything in return.
Yes. So the universe gave you, Amanda, free billboards to share one message across the main highways in major cities all around the world, which you already kind of do. But what would these billboards read?
I don't think they would say anything. I just would paint on them all my Buddha in the corner again.
Of course. I should have seen that one coming.
I know. I would love that. Actually, my father-in-law was like, we should buy you a billboard. That would be really cool.
Wait, you really should, though. I actually really should.
I think it's a great idea. I have no idea how much that costs. But
no. LA needs one.
Yeah, that would be great. That's great. Maybe I'll crowdsource it.
You should. Oh my gosh. Amanda, can you make
that idea happen right here on your show? All right.
Yes. I will put the link, if you actually do this, in the show notes. I love that.
Me too.
One last question that I ask all the Euromagic guests. Mm-hmm. How would you advise the Euromagic listeners to create their own magic?
I think the first step is, if you don't have a good relationship with yourself, start there. You know, journal, meditate, go for walks by yourself, have a relationship with yourself first, because I think that puts us in touch with our deepest magic that's going to be most helpful and useful in the world. So know thyself.
That's beautiful. So where can everyone find and connect with you?
On my Instagram, which is 1 and 4 zeros, because I have to get the zero part right. Mm-hmm. 1 and 4 zeros Buddhas, is you can follow the progress of the paintings and the murals as they go up around the world. And my website is the same. It's 10,000 Buddhas spelled out numerically. And on there, it has links to our yoga studio, which is in Point Reyes, California, just whatever we're up to in the world, retreats and trainings.
How fun. I definitely want to take, I would love to like take a class with both you and MC Yogi teaching sometime.
Yeah, we actually used to co-teach a lot. In the early days, we'd get invited to events and we would want to share the experience. So even if they hired him, he would give me like 10 minutes to do something, tell a story at the end. And now we're getting booked separately to go, so we don't co-teach as much, but it was pretty fun.
Oh my gosh. Well, this has been so fun to talk with you. You are so inspirational, and I am so excited, especially for all of the aspiring artists and creatives to listen to this episode. It sparked a lot inside of me, so thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for allowing me to share. It's such a privilege. It's such an honor. Yeah, thank you.
Yomis, that is a wrap. I hope this episode was expanding for you in some way, shape, or form. Feel free to visit our site at yourownmagic.com or check out my shop, eyesofaspen.com. Connect with the other Your Own Magic listeners. We would love to see more conversations started on the Your Own Magic Facebook group. So with all that being said, thank you so much again for tuning in, and I hope you have a magical rest of your day.